A different future starts with you. That's why GoDaddy does more than help you find a name. You can create, sell, and get found online so any small business can drive change or build an empire. We need a new generation of thinking. Your way of thinking. Start different at GoDaddy.com.
Welcome in, everybody, to another episode of That Movie Show. Mike Wenn and Eddie McCabe. And today we are taking a look at the brand new 3.5 hour epic film that you can watch on your phone from Martin Scorsese, The Irishman.
Yeah, you know, some Samsung TVs, the way the director intended.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, he's so, like, we'll get into it, but right off the bat, you can tell how upset he is that the only way this movie was going to get made was with Netflix money, because he's literally come out and been like, I implore you, do not watch my movie on your fucking phones.
Yeah, well, this is
why... Go out and buy an 87-inch TV just to watch The Irishman.
This is exactly what my big problem was with the movie while I was watching it, right? Ooh. Is that it's like, hey, man, like, you want to come out here and say that Marvel movies aren't cinema, and then you go and release this just nonsensical epic on Netflix? It's like, I don't know if you know this, but that's not cinema.
Not cinema. Right. Yeah. So how did you watch the, how did you experience The Irishman?
Well, I went out on Black Friday and I bought a 55-inch 4K TV and I watched it on that.
Okay. That very similar. I have a 55 as well, and that's how I watched it also. So The Irishman, also oddly titled on screen, I Heard You Paint Houses. I know it's the name of the book, but it was weird when those titles kept popping up. Because it threw me, because that's the first inclination of that subtitle, The Irishman, I Heard You Paint Houses. Anyway, had a budget of $159 million. Because it was limitedly released in theaters, it had a box office of $7.5 million. I think that's the biggest bomb we've ever reviewed.
It has to be, right?
Like, $159 million, they brought back $7.5 million at the box office.
Yeah, they didn't do great. It's just also super nonsensical because, yeah, the only reason that they released it in theaters is because they want Academy Award buzz. And it has to have a theatrical run to be a part of the Academy Awards and all that fun stuff.
And to be honest, I mean, Netflix has done this before. They did it with Roma, but I think they also own a very small art house theater in LA that gets them around that loophole. I think Scorsese was the one really pushing it to be like, I need it released in limited cities. Like, it was released in Boston for like a minute and a half.
Yeah. Or, so
three and a half hours.
They own the Egyptian theater. Okay. And so in Hollywood, there's the Chinese theater that everybody knows. Then across the street from that is the El Capitan. And the El Capitan is owned by Disney. And that's where all the Disney premieres are. Then maybe like a block down is the Egyptian theater. And now Netflix owns that. And then like six blocks down and then, you know, across the street is where the Arclight is, which you should go if you want to see a movie in L.A.
They just opened one of those in Boston at the Garden, I believe.
Yeah.
That's where the Sandler premiere was. I didn't want to promote it on the radio show because it's, you know, showcase, but they just opened it. It looks crazy nice.
Yeah, that theater's awesome. I mean, it's like a classic movie theater, which is always nice. It's really nice when you kind of go into like, you know, not like an art house like the Coolidge, which is like an art house theater here where it's like, hey, we're old and don't have the money to fix stuff. It's like,
we still have wooden seats.
Yeah, it's like we're retro for the fun of it. You know what I mean? Like, that's kind of what it feels like, you know? Yeah.
So it was obviously directed by Martin Scorsese. It was based on the book I Heard You Paint Houses by Charles Brandt. Screenplay was written by Stephen Zelane, I'm going with. And it stars Robert De Niro, Al Pacino, Joe Pesci, Harvey Keitel, Bobby Cannavale, Ray Romano. The list goes on and on and on.
Yeah.
You know, everybody that's ever worked in a Scorsese movie or ever worked on Boardwalk Empire or ever worked on Vinyl shows up in this movie.
Yes. This movie is crime Forrest Gump. That's what this movie is. It's crime Forrest Gump.
And since award season has started to kick in, we mentioned it on the radio show. It has been nominated for Golden Globes for Best Picture, Best Motion Picture Drama.
Yeah.
I'm trying to find if any of the actors. I'm trying to pull up the thing again.
Right. I'm not sure if any. I think Pesci.
Scorsese got nominated for director.
Yeah. Pesci got nominated, and I think Pacino got nominated for supporting.
Screenplay. I got that.
Yeah.
Let's see. Screenplay got nominated. Where's drama? Drama. Give drama. It to me.
Yes.
Best performance by an actor in a drama.
Yeah, they're De Niro didn't get nominated, but in supporting.
See, we're supporting. Supporting is way down. No love for supporters.
No, because it's Sam Rockwell and everybody else all the time.
J-Lo got nominated for Best Supporting Actress for Hustlers?
Yes, she did.
After that fucking pole dance, I'd nominate her for Best Actress. Let's see. Pacino and Pesci.
Yep. Which is deservedly so. Both of them were absolutely fantastic.
It was such a delight to see Joe Pesci on screen again.
Yeah, that was the one I cared more about. So I'm going
to
get
into it a little bit because it's a 3.5-hour movie. I don't know how you watched it, but I started it in the morning started with my coffee. Definitely hit pause a few times for bathroom breaks and to refresh my coffee, and then finished it by the time I was making lunch. But I did actively turn my phone off when I watched it because I wanted to watch this movie. I wanted to pay attention, and my ADD is what it is. So I would turn. I literally turned it off and left upstairs.
Oh, well, that's a good way to do that. I sat and watched it in one sitting as well, kind of similarly, you know, basically at the end of the kind of transitional act points, you know, pause, you know, get a drink, go to the bathroom, take a lap. You know what I mean? Because it is a lot to get through. It's a very dense movie. This isn't, you know, it's a very dense movie. It's a lot of people sitting and talking, you know, like it's not a lot of action. There's not a lot going on. You know, something I would say that it was good. It was worth the watch. It's definitely it's on Netflix. So, you know, the cost of entry is very low, you know, because I'm pretty sure if you have like Netflix, I mean, if you have like Comcast or Verizon, they'll like give you Netflix.
Or you know? Based on all the articles, apparently everybody's sharing passwords anyway. I guess I'm the asshole for paying for it.
Yeah. Well, somebody has to be the fish that everybody leeches on. You know what I mean? So I know
give me $2 for Christ's sakes. I got 15 people on my password. Oh, I shouldn't say that.
Well, that was like I had a conversation with my sister because I was like, for my parents, I'm like, hey, here's my, you know, Disney Plus password.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like you have like you're my parents. You don't understand technology. You're never going to actually get Netflix, but you would like it if you had it. So here, take my stuff. You're my parents. I love you. Okay. And then my sister was just like, I need you to give me your password to Disney Plus. And I'm like, no, because every single time I give you my password to Netflix, you give it to all your idiot friends. And then I'm watching my Netflix and then Netflix pops up going, too many people are watching things. Yeah. So no. Yeah. And she goes, I'll give you $5. And it's just a month. I'll give you $5 a month for
your password. How much your friend's going to give me?
Well, no. And I go, if you're going to give me $5 for a month for my Disney Plus password, why don't you just pay the extra $2 to just get it yourself?
$2.
$2 a month. What are you talking about?
I want my $2.
Yeah, you crazy idiot. So, you know, but the cost of entry for The Irishman is pretty low. So, you know, I do like that there are places online. And if your ADD is too much or, you know, you don't want to sit through all 3 hours at once, there are places in online that will tell you when to pause. You know, they'll tell you when to pause without giving anything away, which I do think is really good and very appreciative. I would have preferred that this was broken up kind of like The Hateful Eight. The way that they did that, where it was just like, look, it's all one movie, but we broke it up into 4 episodes for you. You know,
that would take Scorsese wanting to do that. Tarantino wanted to do that and went back and re-edited the movie into a 4-part miniseries. But yeah, there have been blogs who have put out basically how to turn it into your own miniseries. Very similar to when Endgame came out. There was blogs that did spoiler-free reviews that would tell you where to take a piss.
Right.
Like, yeah. Okay. When they're laying on the table talking about New York, run. You have 3 minutes.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Which is good.
It's good. It's nice. It helps. It helped my brother. You know, he goes to the bathroom 2-3 times a movie, and it's like that was important for him. Like, I had to go. I watched the movie 3 times before I seen it with him, and he's like, "All right, where do I go?" So every time I'll be like, "Go ahead, go."
Go now. Go now.
Go now. Go now. It's a Tony and Pepper scene. Go now.
Yeah. Right. All that being said, you know, I do think that it's a little too much. I think that while the movie is good, I do think that Scorsese fell in love with himself and fell in love with his footage a little too much. I think that if this movie didn't have the hype that it had because of the de-aging, like, I think if we had like multiple actors playing these people over different time periods, or, you know, we didn't do the
de-aging. I wouldn't have liked it as much.
I don't think we would have liked it as much.
Because I think like the what I told everybody, because I watched it the day before Thanksgiving when it came out. And when I went to Thanksgiving with my family, a lot of them hadn't seen it yet. And the best way I described it was it felt really comfortable, right, seeing Pesci and De Niro in a Scorsese movie again. It didn't, right, matter how old they were. It didn't matter what they were doing with CGI. It was just the two of them, when they had their first on screen together, it was like an old shoe. It's like, this, yeah, is just comfortable. This feels right.
Yeah, but part of the problem is, because you're absolutely right, and that's what works with the movie, but that also hurts it, because it feels like we've kind of told this story already, you know, and that's kind of tough. Like, it's kind of tough watching this movie and being like, these people in this scenario feels very familiar. You know,
I mean, Scorsese, De Niro, Pacino, they've been swimming in the same pool for 40 years.
Right.
You know what I mean? And they've told different stories, but it's all in the same, it's all basically in the same group of people. You know what I mean? It's all the organized crime types, whether it's, you know, Vegas and Chicago being the casino, or, you know, the small New York family being Goodfellas, to now the, you know, the national appeal of Jimmy Hoffa and that story. It's like, it's all the same fucking animal. You know, yeah, what I mean? Right. They're all lions. It's just, that's one lion, that's the other lion. You know, they're all fucking lions.
Yeah. Right. It was tough. I mean, it just, cause at parts of the movie, it was like, let's just get to it. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I understand that it's based off of a book, off of a guy's life, but we probably could have lopped off the first 45 minutes of this movie and it would have been fine, because I don't think that they did enough with, like, ultimately Anna Paquin's story as his daughter. Like, we didn't set up enough in the beginning.
Man, like, I kind of got it. I didn't find that to be an integral part of the story, but I got enough of it. Like, the you know, from the first moment, which, it's funny because her story also coincides with the one part of the de-aging that I had a real problem with, which was the scene where he takes his daughter to the little grocery store on the corner and then beats the shit out of the guy. The problem was, and I think we talked about this on the radio show a couple weeks ago. They should have fixed this in editing, because De Niro comes out of the grocery store and starts trying to kick the guy on the sidewalk, but it looked like an almost 80-year-old man hobbling to the sidewalk and, you know, kicking him. It's like, why, you know, two cuts and they could have fixed that completely.
Right.
Two cuts. Or use a stuntman. And I mean, you're already digitally masking their face anyway. Use a stuntman to do the fight scenes, because that, and it was just that one scene. Just that one. But it was that one scene that made it very obvious that the guy behind that digital face is an older man.
Yeah. Because there was that.
They rumbled with Pacino. Right. And you never got that feeling. And he's, I think, older than De Niro.
Yeah, that's true. Just the whole thing with the movie, it just felt like it could have been a little tighter, right? Because there's nothing in this movie that
three and a half hours. I think that goes without saying, you know. Yeah. It's one of those things that, and one of the biggest complaints I've seen online, and you know, I posted a very brief this was amazing, go spend time with it type of review, because I knew we were going to do this show and I didn't want to, you know, shoot my wad on Facebook. But it was like people immediately started commenting, oh, it's too long. It's like, yeah, well, there's a movie called The Godfather. Kiss my ass.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The length of the movie, I don't feel that's a valid complaint. And I've heard people complain Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I just picked up the Blu-ray that, oh, it's too long. Oh, Endgame was too long. Oh, this was too.
Yeah.
There's certain movies that are fucking long. And again, it's like the complaints about Tarantino movies being too self-indulgent is almost the same complaint about Scorsese movies being too long.
Right.
They've been that way since day one. If you don't know that it's going to be a self-indulgent Tarantino movie or an over 3 hour Scorsese movie, you just, it's not for you.
Yeah. Right.
It's just not for you.
Yeah. That's the, I guess the problem is like, yeah, yeah, that was the analogy comparison I would have made would have been Endgame, right? Because Endgame was close to, if not 3 hours.
I think it was 303, actually.
Yeah, you know what I mean? So it was 3 hours, too. So you're talking about movies with comparable run times. Huh. And just because a movie is 3 hours or has a certain length doesn't mean that the pacing is going to be the same, because the pacing for Endgame is very different than the pacing for The Irishman, right?
And there are long movies where I've been like, oh, they could have cut 30 minutes out of that.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what it is. Nobody's really bitching about the pacing. Also, because I don't think people really know about pacing.
People don't understand what it is.
But it's like, yes, there are long movies that keep your fucking attention. Like I said, I could have sat for 4 days watching De Niro and Pesci just do their fucking thing.
Yeah, right.
Because we haven't seen them do that since Casino.
Yes, that's true. Because Pesci went off the grid.
Yeah, I mean he hasn't been on. I think, let me see. He did a voice work on a movie. Called The Warrior's Tale in 2015. But the last time he was on screen was 2010 in a movie called Love Ranch. Taylor Hackford movie starring Pesci and Helen Mirren. Basically a story about like Vegas brothels and stuff like that, crime and shit. But yeah. it was wildly mediocre. But
yeah, right.
I think before that he did a cameo in De Niro's Good Shepherd, and
that was it.
That's about it.
Yeah,
we really He's the closest thing to retired as Rick Moranis is. You know what I mean? Yes. Rick Moranis has him a little bit beat because he won't even answer the phone.
Yeah, right. Until the internet loses its mind when he's in Ghostbusters 3.
He shows up in Ghostbusters 3. I cannot fucking wait.
I was a dog one time and they helped me. They're really cool.
Like, seriously, that's the one thing that I agree. I'm about 90% sure he's going to pop up in a cameo, and I really, really, really hope that they don't spoil that in advertising.
I want
to be Tom Cruise in Tropic Thunder. Don't even hint at it.
Right. Nope. Don't even, nothing. You know, but yeah, I liked it. I liked this movie. I thought that the de-aging was good. I thought it was good.
It was good. It
wasn't distracting.
Okay. Did you go back and watch the 20-minute conversation after effect?
No, not yet.
Okay. If you stick around through the end credits of The Irishman, there is a 20-minute conversation with De Niro, Scorsese, Pacino, and Pesci sitting at a table having cocktails, talking about the movie. And throughout it, they actually talk about the de-aging process and they do side-by-side comparisons. Pacino, because of where Hoffa came into the story, they had the least to work with. Like, they didn't have to de-age him so much.
Right.
De Niro obviously had the most, but I feel that Pesci worked the best.
Yes, Pesci's was the best.
The de-aging of Joe Pesci was flawless. The de-aging of De Niro, something about his eyes were very weird. They looked almost robotic.
Yeah, it was weird. It was
like a glassy, shiny robot type eye.
You know, I think the other thing, too, is we know what De Niro looks like now. Like, we've lived in old De Niro now.
Sure.
Whereas, like, Joe Pesci, we haven't seen him in forever. And the first time we see him, he's the young guy. You know what I mean? And he
still kind of looks like the Pesci we remember. Because you say young, but young in this movie is like 50.
Right, exactly. You know what I mean? So we didn't have to necessarily do a lot, slash we haven't seen him recently. And then the same thing with Pacino. Pacino, you know, like you said, we didn't have to go so far back. It wasn't like we had to go 60 years. Like, Keitel was weird.
Here's the funny thing. Keitel wasn't CGI.
Oh, they did practical?
That was something in that little conversation that I found out that I did not know. De Niro, Pacino, and Pesci were the only CGI de-aging. The rest of them used makeup.
Oh, cool.
So Dominic Lombardozzi, great name. He's from The Wire and a bunch of other shows. He played Fat Tony Solano at the end. And I'm looking at him, and he had like that chunky pock face cheek thing. And he was going chomping on the cigar at the award ceremony.
Right.
And I'm like, boy, if that's CGI, that's fucking awful. And then in the conversation, they're like, oh, yeah, it was just the three of them that had the CGI. And I'm like, okay, that makes sense. It was makeup.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? Same thing. Bobby Cannavale was makeup. Keitel was makeup. Ray Romano was makeup. Everybody else was done with makeup because they weren't so prominent, is right. What he said. It's like the supporting cast was done practically just for time.
Yes. Just to get this movie out.
You can't be CGIing a fucking extra for no good reason. It's like just because you can.
Yeah, having Ray Romano be in three scenes and spending $1 million to de-age him.
And he did great.
Oh, Raymond Romano was great.
Post Everybody Loves Raymond, he's been doing really fucking good. He worked with Scorsese in Vinyl, which I don't know if you've seen it on HBO. No. They did one season. I was pissed that they canceled it. It was a fucking awesome show about like the 70s and 80s record industry.
Cool.
It was so fucking cool. And he was really good. Him and Bobby Cannavale were the stars of it. And it was really, really good. Bobby Cannavale was, of course, in The Irishman playing Skinny Razor, wearing his best Chaz Palminteri wig. I don't know if you've noticed that. It looked like Chaz from the Bronx.
Yes. Yeah, very much so. Yes.
But again, it was, I really liked the movie. And I liked the movie, I think, because of all the reasons people are complaining about. Because it was, and it's weird to say an original story because it was based on a book based on a true story.
Right.
But it was like classic Scorsese. Yeah. You know what I mean? It was, for someone like me that enjoys film, enjoys movies. I mean, I've talked many times about I collect movies. Christ, I was talking about on the radio show about the fucking boutique Blu-rays sounding like a fucking douchebag because I spent $30 to buy RoboCop for the third time on physical fucking media. You know what I mean? But I was really excited about it because, you know, it's like, all right, cool. It was refreshing to see a movie done like this.
Oh, yeah. This is the thing that I always talk about is like, you can be like, and this is where Scorsese is right. You can be you can love movies and you can love cinema, and those can be two different things, right? Because you can love to go see movies and, oh, I wanted to see Frozen and I wanted to, you know, all the tentpole movies. This is that difference between a movie and cinema, right? Like that Scorsese, I oddly talked about where it's like, yeah, again, I compare this and Endgame. The run times are similar. Those movies feel very, very different. And yeah, it's okay to look at this and go, oh, it's 3 hours of people just talking? No. I need Iron Man to blow shit up.
That's okay. If that shit's not for you, that's okay. But condemning the movie and calling it trash, which I've seen people say, because of its runtime?
Oh, that's stupid.
Like, there are some people that I know haven't seen it and are condemning it because of its runtime.
Yeah, see, that's stupid because argument
invalid.
You're not allowed to have an opinion if you haven't watched it, right?
Now you can say, I don't want to watch it because it's too long, but I don't like long movies. You can't say it's a piece of shit because it's long.
Yeah, you can't comment on the quality because I prefer for you to tell me to tell the story as long as it takes, right? Because we've seen too many movies go the other way, right? Where it's, hey, this movie needs to clock in at 90 minutes. And it's like, oh, well, if we had it at an hour 45, this movie would have been awesome. You know, we see that a lot in the director's cuts and unrated cuts of movies, where it's like, wow, this movie was garbage, but then it caught a second life on DVD because we were able to put in those three scenes that padded the runtime to, you know, an hour and 45 minutes. And now all of a sudden, everything makes sense and this movie's awesome.
Like Rob Schneider's The Animal.
Like Rob Schneider's The Animal.
I mean, I look at runtimes, and I just pulled this up just to make sure I was right about it. Another Pacino, De Niro, not on screen at the same time, but The Godfather Part II, 3 hours and 22 minutes.
Yeah.
And one of the most revered movies in history, so suck my dick.
Yes. Godfather 2, Casino is...
Godfather was 255, another pushing 3 hours. Sometimes movies take a little bit, but that's also why they're experiences.
Seven Samurai is one of my favorite movies of all time, and that clocks in at 3 hours. It's in black and white and Japanese.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, there are people that I go to see movies with all the time, and we talk about, like, oh, what's your favorite movie? And it's like Seven Samurai. It's like, oh, I've never seen it. And it's just like, you would hate it.
You wouldn't like it.
It's black and white, foreign, in 3 hours. You don't have the attention span. I'll go see Ant-Man with you, and we'll have a high five and blast. But I'm like, no, man, I'm not. We're not sitting down to watch my Criterion collection of Seven Samurai. Right. We're just not.
Casino, 258. Goodfellas, 226. Now we're getting a little shorter, but still. Yeah.
Well, like, that's the thing is, Goodfellas is, out of all of his catalog, the most, like, movie.
It's the most consumable.
It's the most consumable, and that's why it is the way, revered the way it is, because it's like, oh, everybody, it's the point of the cost of entry isn't so high.
Right. And let's see, the one that I'm going to point to, and thinking about recording this today, it made me want to watch it, and it clocks in at 3 hours, and I was watching it right before we started recording, Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah.
I fucking love that movie.
That movie's fun.
I love that movie. I'm also very weird. I like those the movies of excess. You know, Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, Wolf of Wall Street. Anything that takes, like, life to the extreme, I'm all in on those fucking
stories.
Well,
the thing I like about Wolf of Wall Street is that it's a movie about excess that in itself is excess, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that movie just picks up in nonsense. Yeah. Like, there's a scene where that plane just explodes, and it's just like, that's out of left field.
And the best part is he almost looks at camera and goes, did you just see that?
Yeah, right.
Like, did that really happen? And we're definitely going to have to do Wolf of Wall Street on the show in a little while. We'll add that to the calendar. But The Irishman, have we even talked about the movie at all?
You know, I think it's tough. It's really tough because I think the movie's so new, one, and two, it's so dense that it's tough to just go wire to wire with it.
I think because, like you said, it's 3.5 hours of people talking. It's tough to talk about the movie, but it's much easier to talk about the performances.
Right.
One of my favorite that guy actors is Stephen Graham. He will always be Tommy from Snatch to me. Okay. But he played Al Capone in Boardwalk Empire. He did a shot on Vinyl. Again, worked with Scorsese over time. He was Tony Provenzano. And crushed it.
Yes.
Fucking crushed it. Like, he's sitting there in a scene with Pacino and De Niro and just controlling the situation.
Yeah.
It's, you know, amazing. What I mean? It's like, people are like, oh, this is a Pacino, De Niro, Pesci movie. And this guy comes in and he sits down and takes fucking over.
Yeah, it was
great. He's the main antagonist against these guys. And it's like, and I watched yesterday, I want to say it was Vanity Fair or one of those YouTube channels that does, like, the 20, 30 minute in-depth, like, tell us about this. And he broke down the entire scene, the meeting where he showed up in shorts with Pacino and De Niro. And it was just, and he's sitting there, like, talking like a giddy, like, fan, like us, like, as you would if you're an actor and all of a sudden you're cast in a Scorsese movie about the mob and you're sitting across from De Niro and Pacino. Yeah. You're going to be excited. You know what I mean?
Right.
I watched Jim Norton was on Anthony Cumia's show, and because he played Don Rickles in it.
Yeah.
And he was like, it took, and if you know anything about Jim Norton, you know he's a huge celebrity selfie whore. He loves grabbing selfies with anybody that's even reputably known. And he's like, it took every fucking ounce of me to be in a room with those guys and not get a selfie. He's like, on my last day on the way out, I got one with Scorsese, and that was the best I got, and like half of my head was cut off. You know, it's, it was kind of like I've told my McConaughey story from the fucking that shit movie that I did. And it's like even that I didn't get a fucking selfie, but I was able to chat with him for like 2 seconds walking down the street before the horde of girls grabbed, you know. But yeah, it's like these guys who, when you hear stories from the set, you're working with legitimate legends.
Yeah. They are masters of the craft. I mean, and it was on display. It was on display in this movie. Also, kudos to Joe Pesci, because in all of these, he's kind of the forgotten man, which is really unfortunate, right? Because he's more known, you know, for acting in My Cousin Vinny and Home Alone. You know what I mean?
To
this generation. But, you know, in terms of like that's where he stands out, as opposed to being a tentpole in Casino or Goodfellas, you know? And so it's nice.
Even to that. And I am, you have to watch that conversation on Netflix, because Scorsese him and Pesci were talking about how, when they started, they're like, you're not going to be the normal character you usually play. You're going to be very calm and subdued. And Pesci was, and he's sitting next to Pacino, and he's referencing Pacino because they had that scene at the award ceremony. And he's like, so I got to go, you know, head to head with Al here. And I don't want him to start getting hot, because then my impulses are going to be just to go hot, and I got to stay calm. And they did the script, and everybody stayed calm. And then they let him ad-lib for a little bit, and Pacino starts getting hot, and Pesci's like, and I had to sit there actively, like, tensing up and calming myself because I want to fucking come right back at him. And it was just, it's one of those things, like, I love those types of specials. Like listening to guys like that talk. Robert Rodriguez did a series on his El Rey network called The Director's Chair. Yes. And there's a two-part, two episodes where he did Quentin Tarantino. And again, those are two guys that I could listen, be a fly on the wall to their conversation about movies forever.
Yes.
Like, I can listen to these guys talk about the craft forever.
Have you, so I haven't finished it, but have you watched The Masterclass?
I have not.
Okay. So
I know I have not.
So I have access to Scorsese's Masterclass. Mm-hmm. So we're going to have to sit down and watch it, because it is exactly what it says. It is a masterclass.
It's always cool when you see stuff like that. Again, I'm not sure which, you know, GQ, Vanity Fair, one of these boutique magazines is doing it, but there's a series, where they're having actors interview other actors.
Oh, yes.
And it's just, it's so fucking cool, because it's the most relaxed. It's not an interview. It's two,
no, it's conversations. It's
two peers chatting, you know?
Because they did it with Captain America and Scarlet Witch. So Scarlett Johansson and Chris Evans did it.
That's the one I'm thinking of. There was one, I think it was Bill Hader and John Mulaney. And it's like, it's clear these two are friends.
Yeah,
because
right.
Because they're doing... They start the thing with like 5 minutes of just inside jokes, making each other laugh. And it's like, you know, these two are comfortable. They're friends. There's not going to be any awkwardness. They're not going to do the gotcha questions.
Yeah, right. You know,
tell us about your ex-wife. It's like, no. It's just like, let's have some fun and let's do some interesting conversations and let's share our stories. It's always more interesting. I think on Netflix YouTube, they actually did one with the cast of the Dolomite movie with Eddie Murphy. Cool. And having him and Wesley Snipes talk about how Wesley Snipes was auditioning for the role that Arsenio Hall ended up getting in Coming to America, and how he was pissed at him for so many years about that. And now he's actually in the sequel. I know we're veering off course, but shit like that is just so cool to watch. And for me.
No.
That gets me.
That's my favorite part of Disney Plus, is now, because you lose a lot of that with these types of streaming services, right? Where like... Yeah, they tacked on the they tacked on the 20-minute conversation in The Irishman. Yeah. But I didn't know it was there. You know, in
Disney, I didn't either.
In Disney Plus, there's a tab that on the movie page that's just extras, and all of that stuff that's just on the DVD or on the Blu-ray is now just available there, which is awesome because that's the that was always the best part of DVDs and ultimately Blu-rays was all of that extra bonus content because, you know, people care about this. And a lot of people, even, you know, certain people like inside the industry, you know, don't realize that it's an art, right? And there is a craft to it. And, you know, it's not just like, oh, I bought this really expensive camera, so I'll be able to make movies, right? And, you know, and so it's just like, it's great when you get to talk, like hear people that are executing at such a high level and how their mind works.
I mean, I'll go back to that Blu-ray that I bought. You see, on the back, you see that fine print there?
Yeah, right.
That's all special features on fucking RoboCop.
right. On RoboCop.
You know what I mean? On a movie that's, you know, that's pushing, it's got to be almost 40 years old at this point. Definitely 30.
Yeah, it
was 80-something. But yeah, that shit is just, it's so cool because there is so much work and there is so much effort put into it. In that conversation, they also talk about... The scene where Pacino is sitting with his family and they're watching Kennedy on TV and he gets all pissed off and he's angry and he keeps cursing and the wife keeps telling him to stop cursing because the kids are around. That was the first day that Pacino was on set, which, you know, for those that don't know, that was the first day that Martin Scorsese had ever worked with Al Pacino.
Yeah.
You know, they had tried, they say it many times. We tried for many years to find something and it just never worked until this. And the first take, he gets up and storms off. And I think it was either director of photography or somebody goes up to Scorsese and is like, he's supposed to be 45 in this scene. He's getting up like he's like 65. Can we like have him jump up a little quicker with a little bit more effort? And Scorsese looks at him after the first take ever with Al Pacino after so many years of wanting to work together. And he goes, you fucking tell him.
Yeah, right.
It's like, and this is Martin Scorsese not wanting to tell Al Pacino to jump up quicker because it's Al fucking Pacino.
Yeah,
like,
right.
Even after so many years of doing this, even Scorsese fanboys out a little bit.
Of course. You know, I think it's worth a watch. I definitely highly recommend it, especially because it's going to be the talk of the Oscar seasons. You know? It
definitely is.
You know, so it's definitely a movie that you should check out if you like those type of things, if you care about, you know, Oscars, Golden Globes, you know, everything like that.
Let's nitpick a little bit.
So
it opens up with a shot of the wedding invitation for Ray Romano's daughter.
Yes.
And somebody's obviously getting dressed to go to the wedding and get shot.
Yes.
Okay. And that's over De Niro's narration of telling, you know, I paint houses. You know, I thought painting houses was just painting houses. Then I started painting houses. Boom. Blood splatter on the walls. Okay.
Sure.
Later in the movie, in the final act of the movie, according to this story, Frank Sheeran kills Jimmy Hoffa.
Right.
And that's the scene that we're implied that is calling back to the opening. However, it's not, because they're in a different house and it's in the front doorway. So my question always was, who the fuck did he kill before that wedding?
Right. Who that one always annoys me. Because he
went right from there to the wedding.
Right. That annoys me. The other thing, he gets on a plane to fly back to wherever to go to the wedding.
To go to the wedding. And he didn't kill anybody else in that house. Also, where the fuck did Jesse Plemons go at the end of that? I know they said he went to jail for 10 months or some shit, but Jimmy Hoffa, quote unquote, is still to this day in 2019 missing. He's never been declared dead. If your stepdad and your mom is going batshit looking for him, wouldn't you say, well,
I dropped him off at this house.
I dropped him and Frank off at this house with fucking, you know, 4-inch spectacles, whatever the hell that guy's name was. And, you know what I mean? And it's like, I dropped him off at this house.
Right. He was there.
Go that look was... at that house or talk to Frank.
Yeah, right. Talk to the guys that were with him.
Because then it's implied that, you know, the day after he goes missing, Frank calls Hoffa's wife.
Right.
And it's like, has she not talked to her stepson does he not know he's missing? Because my implication was that Goggles fucking killed him.
Yeah, right.
I was convinced through that whole fish conversation in the car that he was fucking dead.
Yeah, he had to have been.
Clearly lying. Frank clearly set this up to make you lie.
Yeah.
So right. Goggles is going to shoot you in the fucking face.
Yeah.
But he has to.
Yeah, it's weird. And especially because it all hinges on like the relationship that all of a sudden at the end of the movie becomes really, really, really important. He doesn't call Hoffa's wife right away, and so his daughter's bullshit about it and won't ever talk to him again.
His daughter's always been bullshit at him. My thought was because she had a kinship with Hoffa.
Yeah,
she really took a liking to Jimmy Hoffa and didn't take a liking to Pesci's character, Russell Bufalino.
Yeah.
And I thought at that award ceremony for the Teamsters that they were honoring De Niro.
Right.
And when Pesci saw the daughter dancing with Pacino, that like he was going to, because I'm still waiting for him to go full Pesci in this movie.
Yeah,
I'm like,
right.
Oh, he's going to just fucking kill him. Like, that's why Hoffa died. It wasn't some real crime. It was jealousy over the affection of a, you know, fake niece.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. That never happened. The other thing that I found to just be really annoying was the context in which the story was being told. I thought was really annoying because it, like, when we first see De Niro, he's in the nursing home, and he's talking to somebody, and then
he's talking to us, the viewer,
right? And but that's the only time that he ever like addresses the camera, and it's
they flashed back to those narrations a couple times.
Yeah, there's just no context to it. I looked at that
as a Scorsese thing because there's always narration in the Scorsese.
Yeah, narration isn't what I have the problem with. It's the addressing of like he was like doing an expose or like he was like it's implied that he was telling the story to somebody, and we never saw who that somebody was. Like it would have been a good reveal if it was his daughter that he was telling everything to finally.
I always felt that he was talking to us. I always thought that the character was just speaking to the audience, and that's what that was. It was the visual narration, because we never got those in Goodfellas or Casino. It was always just an audio narration. And it was weird because they started with that. And then all of a sudden, the audio narration was still going when they pan up to old man De Niro in the wheelchair, and he's still not talking. And then all of a sudden, he picked up talking. It was a weird thing. I just took it as like it's just him. It's Scorsese doing his narration thing.
Yeah, it was weird.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would have made. I think honestly, now that I think about it, where it would have made more sense, it wouldn't have worked visually because of the Steadicam shot through the nursing home finding him. But at the end, if it was him talking to the priest the whole time.
Yeah, right. Just a little bit of context.
If that's how it all came together, I think it would have made that portion, your gripe with that scene, I think would have made a hell of a lot more sense.
Yes. If we all ultimately circle back around and he was talking to the priest the whole time, kind of like he was absolving him of his own sins, then sure. Great. Awesome. I love it. But
also something I noticed with the CGI, and I didn't notice it until probably an hour or so in, I guess just because I was paying so much attention to the movie. But it was weird because where the hairpiece was, they all were wearing hair pieces, obviously.
Yes,
and
of course.
Where the hairpiece was, about an inch of forehead was clearly the makeup appliance, and it didn't move.
So while
their CGI forehead was wrinkling and furrowing and all that stuff, and their eyebrows are all moving, there was this weird inch of skin
as if they were just dolls.
And it was almost as if like there was, and you could almost tell that it was an appliance because the CGI looked like it was moving underneath it.
Yeah.
And it was just very, it caught my attention, and the bitch of it was once you see it, you can't stop looking at it.
So you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of in Disney World or in Disney parks now, they have these new face mapping technology on their animatronics. So the famously Buzz Lightyear in Space Ranger Spin, and then the Seven Dwarfs in the Seven Dwarfs Mine Train. So they're audio animatronics. And Elsa from Frozen in the new Frozen ride. So basically they're audio animatronics, except instead of making a real face, they digitally project the face of these characters onto it. So they're so that they have more lifelike facial expressions.
But and, the rest of the body doesn't fucking move.
But the rest of the body is just an audio animatronic. So it's still like, you know, and that's what it looked like for some of this, where it was just like, yeah, it's Tim Allen going ham as Buzz Lightyear, but then all of a sudden his eyebrows just like disappear, you know, underneath the part of the helmet.
Or worse, I've seen videos on YouTube of the Seven Dwarfs Mine Train where the dwarfs, the whatever's running it glitches out, and it's the Windows blue screen on their fucking faces.
Yes, it's terrifying.
And they've come in, they've started like putting like an actual just plastic mask over the face because they can't reboot the computer.
That's amazing. It's almost as amazing as Ursula's head. When the Ursula's head animatronic just fell over, it was nuts. But that's this isn't that Disney Park show. Which we do need to do.
But overall, I didn't have a lot of problems with the movie. I really didn't. I thought it was a really good film, and I really enjoyed it. It's, you know, again, it's long. You have to mentally commit to 3.5 hours of this movie, whether it's one sitting, four sittings, or whatever the fuck. You have to commit to the time. And if you commit to the time and you actually watch it, it's a good fucking watch.
Yeah, it's a good movie. It's definitely worth the time. It's definitely worth checking out, especially like I said in award season. I just wish that there was stuff in there that like could have been cut. I mean, the movie, yeah, we could have gotten away with a 2.5 hour movie easily.
Yeah, I guess.
You know. So, but other than that, I thought it was fine.
That was The Irishman.
That was The Irishman.
Coming up next week, did we decide on the Santa Chronicles?
I feel like we decided on the Santa Chronicles.
All right. So I guess we're in Netflix mode. So last year, Netflix released their holiday movie, the Santa Chronicles, the Santa Claus Chronicles, something like that. Christmas Chronicles. That's what it was.
That was it.
The Christmas Chronicles, starring Kurt Russell as Santa Claus. I watched it last year and instantly made the post that, from now on, Kurt Russell is my Santa Claus. Always will be. It's if he was always Santa Claus to me. It's a lot of fun. You haven't seen it yet, so I think we sit down, we watch it. Plus, coming up, we also have our Christmas watch-along, which we have not decided what piece of trash we're going to sit down and watch. So you can definitely give us your recommendations on social media. You can follow myself at Mike Wendt, at The Eddie McCabe, hashtag That Movie Show. You can find all of our podcasts on thatmovieshow.net, facebook.com/thatmovieshowtv. And I guess we'll see you next week for the Christmas Chronicles, right?
Yeah.
All right, everybody. Bye.
A different future starts with you. That's why GoDaddy does more than help you find a name. You can create, sell, and get found online so any small business can drive change or build an empire. We need a new generation of thinking. Your way of thinking. Start different at GoDaddy.com. A different future starts with you. That's why GoDaddy does more than help you find a name. You can create, sell, and get found online so any small business can drive change or build an empire. We need a new generation of thinking. Your way of thinking. Start different at GoDaddy.com.